guy?
He popped up, snatching me into a back-clapping man-hug, and I was embarrassed at how I balked at his touch.
So, he said, releasing me and plopping down on the bench. What you know good?
This and that, I said.
So we going to talk about this?
We can't, I said. Roy patted the space next to him and then leaned back on the tree, stretching his legs in front of him.
Did my old man tell you how we set you up?
He mentioned it, I said.
So what was it? I need to know that, and I promise I'll get out of your way.
What was it that made you say, fuck old Roy? I'm sorry he's sitting in prison, but I think I'll help myself to his woman.
You're misrepresenting, I said. You know that's not how it went down.
Because it felt dirty leaving Celestial in the driveway. Out of earshot, I beckoned to her.
Don't call her over here,
Roy said.
This is between me and you.
It's between all of us, I said. Across the street, our neighbor straightened several poinsettias, placing them in a row. Roy waved at her, and she waved back.
Maybe we should invite the whole neighborhood and let it be between everybody.
Celestial sat on the bench between us, clean like rain. I circled my arm around her shoulder.
Don't touch her,
Roy said.
You don't have to pee on her like a dog marking your territory. Have some manners.
I'm not territory,
Celestial said. Roy got up and began an agitated pacing.
I'm trying to be gracious. I swear to God I am. I was innocent, he said. Innocent. I was minding my business, and next thing I know, I got snatched up. It could happen to you too, Dre. It takes nothing for some he say, she say to go left. You think the police are going to care that you got your own house or that you got that Mercedes SUV? What happened to me could happen to anybody.
You think I don't know that? I said.
I've been black all my life.
Celestial said,
Roy, not one day went by when we didn't talk about you, didn't think about you. You think we don't care, but we do. We thought you were gone for good.
I was silent as Celestial explained. Her words were those we agreed upon, but now they rang less than true. Were we saying that our relationship was an accident of circumstance? Were we saying, too, we loved each other only because Roy had been unavailable? That was a lie. We loved each other because we always had, and I refused to ever claim anything different.
Celestial, Roy said, stop talking.
Look, I said, Roy, you have to see that we're together. Full stop. Details are not important. Full stop.
Full stop,
he said. Full stop, I repeated.
Listen,
Celestial pleaded.
Both of you.
Go in the house, Roy said. Let me talk to Dre.
I pressed my hand to the small of her back to urge her toward the door, but she was adamant.
I'm not going, she said. This is my life, too.
We both turned to her. The admiration I feel for her flashed on Roy's craggy face.
Listen if you want to, he said. I told you to go in the house for your own benefit. You don't need to hear what me and Andre need to talk about. I'm trying to be a gentleman.
It's her choice, I said. We don't keep secrets.
Oh, yes, you do,
Roy sneered.
Ask her about last night.
I asked her with my eyes. But her expression was blank, shuttered down against the sun.
I'm telling you that you don't want to be out of here, Roy said to Celestial. When men talk, it's not a pretty kind of conversation. That's really the main thing about being in prison. Too many men in one place. You're stuck in there knowing that there is a world full of women who are putting out flowers, making things nice, civilizing the whole planet. But there I was, stuck in a cage like an animal with a bunch of other animals. So I'm going to give you one more chance, Celestial. Take your pretty little self in the house. Go sew some baby dolls or something.
I'm not going, she said. Somebody has to be out here who has some sense.
Go on in the house, baby, I said. You had your chance to talk to him all day yesterday. I tried to make the word talk sound neutral, not like I was wondering what they did beyond conversation.
10 minutes is enough, Roy said. This won't take long.
Celestial stood up. I watched her back, smooth and muscular, as she walked away. Roy looked across at the neighbor who was watching openly now, not even bothering to fiddle with her flowers.
After Celestial finally disappeared, he said,
"Like I said, the world is full of women, Atlanta especially. You're black, employed, heterosexual, unincarcerated, and into sisters. This shit is your fucking oyster.
But you had to go for my wife."
That was disrespectful to me as a person. It was disrespectful to what I was going through, what all of us are going through in this country. Celestial was my woman. You knew it. Hell, you're the one that introduced us.
Now he was standing before me, his voice not so much raised but going deeper.
What? Was it just convenient? You wanted some pussy next door so you wouldn't have to bother getting in your car?
Now I got to my feet, because there are some words that a man can't take sitting down. When I stood up, he was waiting on me and thrust his chest against mine.
"Get out of my face, Roy. Tell me," he said. "Tell me why you did it."
"Why I did what?"
"Why you stole my wife. You should have left her alone. She was lonely, fine, but you weren't. Even if she was throwing it at you, you could have walked away."
"What about this is so hard for you to comprehend?"
"That's bullshit," Roy said. "You knew she was my wife before you got caught up with this love stuff. You saw your opportunity and you took it. Long as you got your dick wet, you didn't care."
I pushed him because there was no other option.
"Don't talk about her like that." "Or what? You don't like my language? We are not all that PC in prison. We say what's on our mind."
"So what do you mean? What do you want me to say? If I tell you she was a piece of ass, you will want to fight. If I tell you I want to marry her, it won't be any better. Why don't you just hit me and cut the chit-chat? The bottom line is that she doesn't belong to you. She never belonged to you. She was your wife, yeah, but she didn't belong to you. If you can't understand that, kick my ass and get it over with."
Roy paused for a minute. "That's what you have to say? That she doesn't belong to me?"
He let out a stream of spit through the space where his tooth used to be.
"She doesn't belong to you either, my friend."
"Fair enough." I walked away, hating the questions twining up my legs like a barbed vine. It was doubt that did it, that left me exposed, not watching my own back. Roy's laugh shook me up, made me forget that I trusted her like I trusted my own eyes. He struck me from behind before I'd even taken a step.
"Don't walk away from me."
This is the violence my father promised me.
"Take it," he had said. "Take it and get on with your life."
I offered my face and Roy hit me squarely in my nose before I could even ball my fists. I felt the impact first, then the hot gush over my lip, followed by the pain. I got in a couple of strong blows, a low hook to the kidneys, and drove my head into his chest before he wrestled me to the ground. Roy spent the last 5 years in prison while I'd been writing computer code. Up until this very instant, I was proud of my clean record, my not-thug life. But on the grass beneath Old Hickey, shielding myself from Roy's granite fists, I wished I were a different type of man.
"Everybody is so calm, like this is only a little speed bump," he panted. "This is my life, motherfucker, my life. I was married to her."
Have you ever stared fury in its eyes? There is no saving yourself from a man in its throes. Roy's face was haunted and wild. The cords of his neck muscles were like cables. His lips made a hard gash. The unceasing blows were fueled by a need to hurt me that was greater than his own need for oxygen or even freedom. His need to hurt me was greater even than my own desire to survive. My efforts to protect myself were ritualistic, mannered, and symbolic, while his fists, feet, and needs were operating from a brutal code. Had he learned this in prison, this way of beating a person? There was none of the stick and move that I remember from schoolyard brawls. This was the nasty scrapping of a man with nothing to lose. If I remained on the grass, he would stomp my head. I raised myself, but my legs failed me. I fell first to my knees, like a building being demolished. And then I was on the lawn, the odor of dry grass and wet blood in my nose.
"Say you're sorry," he said,
his foot poised to kick. This was an opportunity, a chance to wave the white flag. I would be easy enough to spit out the words along with the blood in my mouth. Surely I could give him that. Only I could not.
"Sorry for what?" "You know what for."
I looked into his eyes, narrowed against the sun.
but I didn't see anyone that I recognized. Would I have surrendered if I thought it would have saved me? If I believed that he was intent on anything other than killing me? I don't know. But if I were going to die on my front yard, I would die with the taste of pride in my mouth. I am not sorry. But I was sorry. Not for what was between Celestial and me. I would never regret that. I was sorry for a lot of things. I was sorry for Evie, suffering from lupus for so many years. I was sorry for elephants killed for their ivory. I was sorry for Carlos, who traded one family for another. I was sorry for everyone in the world, because we all had to die and nobody knew what happened after that. I was sorry for Celestial, who was probably watching from the window. Most of all, I was sorry for Roy. The last time I saw him, on that morning before his mother's wake, he said, "I never had a chance, did I? I only thought I did." There was pain, yes, but I figured out how not to feel it. Instead, I thought about Celestial and me and how maybe we just thought we could weather this calamity. We believed we could talk this out, reasoning our way through this. But someone was going to pay for what happened to Roy, just as Roy paid for what happened to that woman. Someone always pays. Bullet don't have nobody's name on it. That's what people say. I think the same is true for vengeance. Maybe even for love. It's out there, random and deadly, like a tornado.
Celestial. I wonder about myself sometimes. Roy and Andre circled each other, radiating locker room energy, violence, and competition. They told me to leave, and I did. Why? Was I afraid to bear witness? I'm not an obedient person, but on that Christmas Eve, I did as I was told. They must have grabbed each other as soon as I shut the door. By the time I made it to a window, peeking through a curtain like a silly Southern belle, Roy and Andre were rolling around on the dry lawn, a tangle of arms and legs. I watched for what must have been only several seconds, but whatever the duration, it was too long. When Roy gained the upper hand and pinned Andre to the ground, straddling and punishing him with windmilling fists and rage, I pulled open the window. The lace curtain floated from the thin rod, covering my eyes like a veil. I yelled their names to the wind, but they either wouldn't or couldn't hear me. The grunts of exertion and satisfaction, both layered over the gasps of pain and humiliation. All these noises floated up to my window, moving me to run outside with the intention of saving them both. Stumbling and quaking, I reached the lawn. "November 17," I yelled, hoping the memory would reach him. He did pause, but only long enough to shake his head in disgust. "It's too late for all of that, Georgia. No magic words for us anymore." Now I had no choice. I pulled the phone from my pocket and aimed it like a gun. With whatever air I could gather, I screamed, "I'm calling the police!" Roy froze, pulled up short by the threat. "You would do that? You would, wouldn't you?" "You're making me," I said, fighting to steady my shaking. "Get off him." "I don't care," Roy said. "Call the law." "Fuck you. Fuck Andre, and fuck the police." Andre struggled to free himself, but Roy, as if to underscore his point, delivered a closed-fisted blow. Andre shut his eyes but didn't cry out. "Please, Roy," I said. "Please, please don't make me call the police." "Do it," Roy said. "Do I look like I care? Call them. Send me back. There's nothing for me here. Send me back." "No," Andre managed to say. His pupils, dark and wide, edged out light irises. "Celestial, you can't send him back, not after everything. Do it," Roy said. "Celestial." Andre's voice was resolute, but distant as an overseas call. "Put the phone down. Right now." Kneeling, I set it carefully on the lawn like I was surrendering a weapon. Roy released Andre, who rose only to his knees, his body at half-mast. I rushed over to him, but he sent me away. I'm fine, Celestial, he said, although he wasn't. Wood chips clung to his clothes like mites. Let me look at your eye. Stand down, Celestial, he said, softly, his teeth streaked pink. Only a few yards away, Roy flexed his hands in time with his steps. I didn't kick him. When he was on the ground, I didn't kick him. I could have, but I didn't. But look at what you did do, I said. What about you? Roy was pacing now, back and forth over a short distance, like he was covering the floor of a narrow cell. It wasn't supposed to be like this, he said. I was just trying to come home. I wanted some time to talk to my wife and figure out what was what. Dre wasn't supposed to have nothing to do with it. I didn't call the police, but they came anyway, with strobing blue lights, but no sirens. The officers, a black woman and a white man, acted put upon to be working on Christmas Eve. I wondered what they were thinking as they regarded us. Both men were bruised and bloody, and I was dressed like holiday cheer, whole and unhurt. I felt like a mother of newborn twins, hurrying from one man to the next, making sure neither was neglected, that both had a piece of me. Ma'am, said the woman cop, is everything all right? I had not been this close to a police officer since the night at the Piney Woods when I had been pulled from my bed. My body memory smarted as I fingered the scar underneath my chin. Despite the December chill, I felt the spectral heat of that August night. Roy and I had been ordered through crosshairs not to speak and not to move, but my husband reached for me anyway, tangling our fingers for one desperate instant before a cop separated us with his black boot. Please don't hurt him, I said to the policewoman. He's been through a lot. Who are these men? The white cop asked me. His accent was thick and gooey, all Marietta, turned left at the Big Chicken. I tried to connect with the woman, but she fixed her eyes on the men. With the voice I used on the telephone, I said, This is my husband and my neighbor. We had a little bit of an accident, but everything is fine now. The woman looked to Andre. Are you the husband? When he didn't answer, Roy spoke. I'm the husband. It's me. She nodded at Andre for confirmation. So you're the neighbor? Rather than say yes, Andre recited his address, pointing at his own front door. Once the police satisfied themselves, their Merry Christmases resonated like a dark omen. They left without blue lights, just the exhaust souring the air. Once they were gone, Roy sat heavily on the half-moon bench. He gestured toward the seat beside him, but I couldn't go to him, not with Andre standing a few feet away, his face purpling around the eyes and his split lip showing red meat. Georgia, Roy said, and then his body contracted dry heaving, his head between his knees. I went to him and rubbed his twitching back. I'm hurting, he said. I'm hurting all over. You need to go to the hospital? I want to sleep in my own bed. He stood up, like a man with somewhere to go. But he only turned toward old Hickey. It's too much. Then quickly, it must have been quickly, but I somehow took notice of each move. Roy tucked his lips against his teeth, gripped the tree like a brother, and then tipped his head back, presenting his face to the sky before driving his forehead against the ancient bark. The sound was muted, like the wet crack of an egg against the kitchen floor. He did it again, harder this time. I found my feet, and without thinking, I positioned myself between my husband and the tree. Roy craned his head back again, cocked and ready, but now if he chose to drive his skull forward, he would strike me instead. He executed a little twitch of his knotted shoulders. Then he surveyed old Hickey, the wood chips scattered in the grass, Andre, me, and lastly himself. How did this happen? Roy touched his forehead, the small cut leaked blood over his eyebrow. Then he sat down on the grass, smoothly but with a sense of mission. What do you want me to do? He asked. He turned to Dre with the same curious tone. Seriously, what do you think I should do? Andre sat himself gingerly on the round bench, tensing himself against his injuries. We'll help you get set up. If you want, you can stay in my house. I'll stay in your house and you will stay in my house with my wife? What kind of sense does that make? Then he looked to me. Celestial, you knew that wasn't going to work. You know me. How could I go for that? What were you expecting? What did I expect? The truth is that before Roy materialized in my living room, I had forgotten that he was real. For the last 2 years, he was only an idea to me, this husband of mine who didn't count. He had been away from me longer than we had been together. I'd convinced myself that there were laws limiting responsibility. When I sent Andre to Louisiana, I hoped that maybe Roy would choose not to come to Atlanta at all. That he would send for his things, that I would be a memory to him in the way that he was a memory for me. Roy, I said, wondering aloud, tell the truth. Would you have waited on me for 5 years? He twitched that same shrug. Celestial, he said, like he was talking to someone very young, this shit wouldn't have happened to you in the first place. Andre made a move, as if to join us on the dry grass, but I shook my head. His breath escaped his mouth in exhausted puffs of white. How does it feel to make all the decisions? Roy said. It's been up to you for the last 5 years. When we were dating, it was up to me. You had a finger that needed a ring, you remember that? Remember when I was a fiancé you could be proud of, flashing that rock like a searchlight? I won't lie and say I didn't get off on it. But now I don't have anything to offer you but myself. But it's better than it was last year, when I couldn't even give you that. So here I am. He looked to his left. Your turn, Dre. What do you have to say for yourself? Andre spoke to Roy, but he looked at me. I don't have to tell Celestial what I feel. She already knows. But tell me, Roy said, tell me how you ended up with your head on my pillow. Roy, man, Dre said, I'm sorry for what happened to you. You know I am. So don't take this as disrespect, but I'm not going to discuss this with you. He touched his busted lip with his tongue. You had a time when we could have talked. But you wanted to fight. Now, I don't have anything to say to you. What about you, Georgia? Do you have anything to say? How did you end up picking Dre over me? The true answer was that Olive had settled it by lying in her coffin as Big Roy showed me what real communion looked like, what it sounded like, even what it smelled like. Fresh earth and sadness. I could never tell Roy that by his parents' measure, what we had wasn't a connection for the ages. Our marriage was a sapling graft that didn't have time to take. As if he could hear the murmur of my thoughts, he said, was Dre just at the right place at the right time? Is this a crime of passion or a crime of opportunity? I need to know. How could I tell him that desire didn't work the way I thought it did when I was younger, my head turned by the electricity of attraction? Andre and I had an everyday thing. We moved each other like we had done it forever, because we had. When I didn't answer, Roy pressed on. How did we end up here? My key works, but you won't let me in. He gathered his body up and plunked down on the bench, blank-eyed and miserable. I turned to Andre, who didn't meet my gaze. Instead, he studied Roy, broken and shivering. "You didn't do this to him," Andre said. "Don't let him set that at your feet." And he was right. All around Roy were the shards of a broken life, not merely a broken heart. Yet who could deny that I was the only one who could mend him if he could be healed at all? Women's work is never easy, never clean. "You know where I'll be." Andre turned toward his own house. Andre went his way. Roy and I went ours. Me leading Roy the way you would provide assistance to a man who has been shot or has lost his sight. As we climbed the stairs to the front walk, I heard Andre's calm words. "He hit his head pretty bad. He might be concussed. Don't let him go to sleep right away." "Thank you," I said.
"Thank me for what?" said Andre.
In the bathroom, Roy let me clean his wound, but he refused to go to the emergency room. "I know you can take care of me." But there was little to do besides apply antiseptic. As the night stretched on, we asked one another questions to keep sleep at bay, even though both our eyelids hung low as though weighted down by coins. "What were you looking for?" I asked him. "When you were going through all the boxes." Roy smiled and snugged the tip of his pinky in the gap in his mouth. "My tooth. It wasn't trash. Why did you throw it out?"
"No," I said. "I have it."
"It's because you love me," he slurred. "Stay awake," I said, shaking him. "People with concussions can die in their sleep."
"Wouldn't that be some shit?" he said.
"I get out of prison, come home, find my wife with another man, win her back, and then get in a fight with a tree, and wake up dead."
He must have sensed a change in me, even in the dim light.
"Did I speak too soon? I didn't win you back?" Each time his eyes drooped, I shook him back to life.
"Please don't," I whispered, opening myself to him, undoing a rusted latch. "I can't lose you like this."
Andre, this is how I am lonely. When Celestial opened my front door with her key and walked into the family room, she had changed her clothes, but I was still wearing the fight filthy jeans from that terrible afternoon. Even before she got close enough for me to see her swollen eyes, I sensed the salt on her like you can on the beach. It wasn't quite 1 a.m., night, but also the next day.
"Hey,"
she said, lifting my legs and sitting on the sofa. Setting my calves back on her lap, she added,
"Merry Christmas."
"I guess," I said, handing her the square glass containing the last of my father's scotch. As she swallowed it, I smelled Carlos in the fumes. I inched closer to the back of the sofa and made room. "Lie down," I said. "I don't want to talk about this when I can't feel you next to me." She shook her head and stood up.
"I need to walk around."
She traveled the room like a ghost, aimless and trapped. With effort, I pulled myself to a seated position. I'd taped my ribs, but it hurt with every breath.
"So, take it that Roy is still alive?"
"Trey,"
she said, finding the place in the room farthest from me. She sat on the white carpet and crossed her legs. Her bare feet looked naked and cold.
"He's wrecked."
"That doesn't have anything to do with us."
"There's so much that you don't know. Things people like us can't even imagine."
"Is that why you're hiding in the corner?"
"Celestial, what are you doing?"
I beckoned to her.
"Come here, girl, talk to me."
She returned to the sofa and we lay down. Celestial fitted herself against me, her forehead against mine.
"I married him for a reason," she said. You can never really unlove somebody. Maybe it changes shape, but it's there.
You really believe that?
Trey, we have so much,
she said.
And he has nothing, not even his mother. The whole time he was talking, my face was on fire, just like at Olive's funeral, her handprint stinging on my cheek, making sure I didn't forget. It's hot right now.
She reached for my hand.
Touch it.
I nudged her away from me, suddenly irritated by her touch, by the scotch on her breath, even the scent of lavender on her neck. I didn't want to cradle her talk about ghost slaps, dead mothers, and the right thing to do. Just go, I said. If you want to leave me, just do it. Don't try to make it supernatural. You are the one making this choice, Celestial. You.
You know what I mean, Dre. We've been lucky. We were born lucky. Roy starting from scratch. Less than scratch. You saw him trying to kill himself up under that tree? He wanted to crack his own skull.
Actually, I was the one he was trying to kill.
Dre, she said, you and me, we are just heartbroken. That's it. Only heartbroken.
Maybe that's it for you, I said.
Baby,
she said,
can't you see? Whatever I do to you, I am doing to myself.
Then don't do it. You don't have to. She shook her head and said,
you didn't see him. If you had seen him, I know you would agree with everything I'm saying.
I need you, Celestial, I whispered. All my life. She shifted so that we were touching again. When she closed her eyes, I felt the tickle of her lashes.
I have to do this,
she said. Celestial owed me nothing. A few months ago, this was the beauty of what we had. No debts, no trespasses. She said that love can change its shape, but for me at least, this is a lie. I kept my arms around her, my body aching and cramped. But I held her until muscles failed, because when I released her, she would be gone.
Roy. I woke up at 11:15, and the clean air smelled like trees. Except for her hair, Celestial was my Georgia girl again. I stood up and she embraced me, spreading her fingers across my shoulders. Her skin was warm like a cup of cocoa. Merry Christmas, baby, I said, just like Otis Redding.
Merry Christmas,
she replied with a smile. With everything, I almost forgot about the holidays, I said, wishing too late that I had used some of Olive's money to buy Celestial a perfect gift, a big thing in a small package.
Don't be silly, she said. You're safe, in one piece.
She knew this wasn't completely true. I was embarrassed remembering Christmas Eve. Not the violence, but my desperate confessions as she kept me awake to save my life. When I told her about the pair, she soothed me with a hymn, the same one she sang for Olive. I had forgotten the power of her voice, the way she scuffed you in order to buff you smooth. It made me think of Davina and her means of restoring a man. What would Celestial think if she knew how I had readied myself for this homecoming by breaking a gentle woman's heart? It costs you to hurt people, but I suppose that Celestial knew that already. You know what I want for Christmas? I said. My two front teeth. Really just that bottom one. She wiggled away and went to the dresser wearing a slip that made her seem like a virgin. The first time I saw her wear white was our wedding day. And the last time had been the night when the door was kicked open. On her dresser rested a jewelry case that was a replica of the dresser itself. She opened it and retrieved a little box. She handed it to me. I shook it and was rewarded with the hard rattle of a fragment of lost bone. Remember that night? You had me out here trying to be Superman.
You rose to the occasion,
she said.
More than rose, soared.
I hope this doesn't come off wrong. I know you're an independent woman and everything. You got your own money and your daddy's money, too. But I liked being able to save you. Chasing that kid down the street, I was a hero, even when he kicked my tooth right out of my head.
He could have killed you, she said. I didn't think about that until you caught up with him.
He could have, but he didn't. No sense worrying about things that didn't happen. I took her hand. I'm not even worried about what did happen. This is a fresh day, a fresh start. We cooked a late breakfast in our night clothes. I volunteered to make salmon croquettes. She put herself in charge of grits. As she stirred the pan, a ruby shimmered dark and hot on her right hand. The phone rang and Celestial answered it.
Happy holidays,
like it was the name of a business. From her side, I could tell she was talking to her parents, Mr. and Mrs. Davenport. Eccentric genius daddy and school teacher mama, safe in their haunted house. I missed them, all that comfort and security. I held out my hand, hoping she would pass me the phone, but she shook her head, mouthing, shh. Are we going over there for dinner? I asked after she hung up.
We're kind of not getting along, she said. Besides, I'm not ready to bring the world into this yet.
Christmas is my favorite holiday, I said, remembering. Ever since I had teeth, Big Roy would slice up an apple and we'd share it. When he was growing up, all he would get under the tree was the one apple. He didn't know other kids were getting toy cars, school clothes, and stuff. He was excited for what he got, a piece of fruit all to himself.
You never told me that,
said Celestial. I guess I didn't want you feeling sorry for us, because really, it's one of my happiest memories. After we got married, I slipped down here on Christmas morning to have my apple. She looked the way you do when you figure something out.
You could have told me. I'm not how you think I am.
Georgia, I said. I know that now. Don't be upset. All that was so long ago. I made mistakes. You made mistakes. It's all right. Nobody's holding anything against anyone. Seeming to think it over, she pulled open the oven, taking out a pan of toast cooked the way Olive used to make it. Soft on the bottom, crispy on the top, except for 5 dots of butter. She held the bread out for my inspection. Her face said, I'm trying. I am trying so hard. I rummaged in the fridge until I found a big red teacher apple. The knife I pulled from the block was small but sharp. I cut away a thick slice and handed it to her before carving one for myself. Merry Christmas. She held the fruit aloft.
Cheers. Bon appetit.
That was the first moment when it felt right, when true reconciliation seemed possible. The taste of the apple, sweet, chased by a tinge of tart, reminded me of Big Roy. I pictured him all alone on this holiday. Wycliffe would be off with his daughter and grands, and Big Roy didn't much truck with anybody else. Celestial, I said. I know I said we weren't going to get stuck in the past, but I have one more thing I need to talk about. Chewing her apple, she nodded, but her eyes were afraid. I'm not trying to fight, I said. I swear I'm not. This isn't about Andre, and it's not about having kids. It's about my mother. She nodded and covered my hand with her own, sticky with apple juice. I took a breath. Celestial, Big Roy told me that you told Olive about Walter. He said it killed her, actually killed her. He said she was getting better, but when you told her about Walter, she gave up. She couldn't see the point anymore.
No.
She said as I pulled my hands from hers.
No, it wasn't like that.
Then what was it like? I promised her that I wasn't mad, but maybe I was. The apple in my mouth tasted like dirt.
I did go see her at the end. She wasn't dying soft, Roy. It was bad. The hospice nurse tried, but Olive wouldn't take the pain medicine because she thought it would kill her faster. And she was trying to live for you. When I went there, her lungs were so full of cancer that I could hear the clogging in her chest, like when you blow bubbles in a glass of milk. She was fighting it hard, but she couldn't win. Her fingers were tinted blue and her lips, too. I asked your father to leave the room, and I told her everything.
Why? How could you do that? She didn't last another day. Olive died alone, while Big Roy was off to the 7-Eleven to get her some applesauce. I missed her, he told me. I got back and she was already gone. My mama didn't deserve that.
No,
she shook her head.
You can blame me for a lot, but not for that. When I told her, she shook her head, looked up at the ceiling and said, God sure is funny, sending Nathaniel to the rescue. Your daddy thinks she gave up, but that's not what it was. When she knew you weren't by yourself, she could finally let go.
Celestial crossed her arms over her chest like she was holding herself together.
I know you said not to, but if you had been there.
And now I held myself with the same posture, arms crossed and gripping my sides. It wasn't my fault that I wasn't there. I would have been there if they had let me. We sat at that table, neither able to comfort the other, her remembering being a bystander to my mother's suffering, and me suffering because I was denied the experience. She composed herself first, took the apple from the table, and sliced off another piece for herself and one for me.
"Eat,"
she said. Night followed day, as it always does, and each night promised a day soon to come. This is something I took comfort in these last bad years. While Celestial showered, I called Big Roy, and I could hear the melancholy in the way he spoke our mutual name. "You okay, Daddy?"
"Yes, Roy, I'm okay. Got a little indigestion. Sister Franklin brought me a plate, but I ate too much of it. Too fast, maybe. She's not a cook like your mama, but not half bad."
"It's okay to enjoy it, Daddy. Go ahead and like her." He laughed, but he didn't sound like himself.
"You trying to mire me off so you don't have to come home and take care of me?"
"I want you to be happy."
"You're free, son. That makes me happy enough for the rest of my days."
Next, I rang Davina as the steam from Celestial's shower wafted into the bedroom. "Merry Christmas," I said to her. In the background was music and laughing. "Is this a bad time?" She hesitated, then said,
"Let me take the phone outside."
As I waited, I imagined her with a tuft of tinsel glinting in her hair, her hand on her hip. When she came back, I tried to sound casual.
"I just want to say Merry Christmas."
I held the phone with both hands like I was worried that somebody was going to snatch it from me.
"Roy Hamilton, I have one question for you. You ready? Here it is. Something or nothing. This could be the eggnog talking, but I need to know. What happened with us? Was it something or nothing?"
This is how it was with women. Pop quizzes with no right answer.
"Something," I said, with a little question curling up like a tail on a pig.
"You're not sure. Listen for me, Roy Hamilton. It's something. It's something to me."
"Davina, don't make me lie. I'm married. I found out that I'm still married." She cut me off.
"I didn't ask you all that. All I ask is something or nothing."
Twisting the phone cord, I recalled our time together. Could it have been only 2 nights? But those 2 nights were the start of the rest of my life. I crawled to her door, but I walked away on my own 2 feet. "Something," I said, leaning in. "Definitely something. I wish I could say what." I hung up as Celestial emerged, looking herself like a Christmas present, dressed in a little lace nighty thing that I recognized as something that I'd bought for her. She had complained that it looked itchy, meaning that it looked cheap. I paid good money for it, but now that she wore it, I could see her point. She twirled.
"Like it?"
"Yeah," I said. "I do, for real." She lay back on the pillows like a goddess on her day off, her chest dusted with fine flecks of gold.
"Come here,"
she said, sounding like someone on television, not like a real person in real life. I went to her, but I didn't hit the light. "One more thing," I said. "One more thing to clear the air, okay? Before we do this, okay?"
"You don't have to. Didn't you say we're starting fresh?"
I smarted at the word fresh. Back in Elo, it meant not getting ahead of yourself, but I knew how she intended it. Fresh was this fantasy of entering a clean, uncluttered room and shutting the door behind you. "I don't want to start fresh. I want to start real."
"Tell me that."
"Okay," I began. "When I was in Elo, for those few days, I was in a hard place. It was a lot to deal with. There's a girl, someone from high school. She invited me to her place for dinner, and one thing led to another." Strange as this may seem, my confession felt familiar, like a favorite pair of jeans. This dynamic was a holdover from before, when we quarreled as only lovers do. This time, Celestial had no right to be jealous. But since when do you need a right to feel the way you felt? I smiled a little, remembering the time that she threw away my slice of wedding cake and drank the rest of the champagne by herself. Maybe I missed the fighting as much as the loving, because with Celestial, I had never known one without the other. Our passion was powerful and dangerous as an unstable atom. I'll never forget our kiss and make up when she bit my chest, leaving a purple ring that gave me a good hurt for a day and a half. With a woman like that, you knew you were in something. Celestial said,
How can I be mad at you? I'm not a hypocrite.
I studied her face, which reflected only weariness. She may as well have shrugged. I had been gone a long time, but I still knew her a little bit. There are things in a core of a person that didn't change. Celestia was an intense person. Yesterday, under the tree, she fought to maintain her composure, to keep her fire in check. But I could feel her burning. Georgia, do you know what I'm trying to say?
I know,
she went on.
You had been through a lot. I know it didn't mean anything. That's what you're about to say, right?
Celestial, I said, catching her up in my arms. I was wearing my trousers and socks while she was nearly nude. She smelled of glitter powder and soap. You don't care, do you?
It's not that I don't care. I'm trying to be an adult about it.
I called her a second ago while you were in the shower. I slowed my delivery, letting each word land hard. I didn't enjoy unspooling the details. I swear I didn't want to hurt Celestial, but I did need to know if I could. I had to know if I still had that kind of power, that kind of sway. When I was with her, she showed me how to be myself again. Or maybe she introduced me to my new self, the person I have to be from here on out. It wasn't purely sexual. I can't lie and tell you that it's nothing. She treated me like a man, or maybe just a human being. Celestial's look was as blank as an egg.
Well, what's her name?
Davina Hardrick. She asked what was up with the two of us. I mean, me and her, not me and you.
What did you say?
Celestial sounded merely curious. I told her I was married. Celestial nodded as she killed the light and pulled me to the bed.
Yes, you are a married man.
I lay in the dark, feeling unsure, as if I had forgotten my own name. Davina said that the only question is something or nothing, but that's as much a fantasy as a fresh start. For the rest of our lives, there would be something between me and Celestial. Neither of us would ever enjoy the perfect peace of nothing. After the clock by the bed flashed midnight and Christmas was over, I felt my wife nibbling kisses across my shoulders. I smelled unhappiness on her breath. But she continued caressing me, saying my name in a mournful whisper. I turned to face her. Celestial's head in my hand was as fragile as a light bulb. You don't have to, Georgia. She shushed me with a kiss I wasn't sure I wanted. In the light of the night table clock, I made out her taut brow and quivering eyelids. We don't have to, I said. We could just go to sleep. Her skin was hot against my thigh as I fingered the lace trim of her nightie. My hands, on their own, sought the rest of her, but her muscles tensed in the wake of my fingers. It was as though I were turning her to stone, cell by cell.
This is how I love you,
she said, lying herself on the bank of pillows. Even in the dark, I could make out the rapid rise and fall of her chest, her bird in the hand breaths.
Please, Roy, please let me make this right.
When I was in prison, Olive visited me every weekend until she was no longer able. I was always glad to see her, but always humiliated for her to see me. One Sunday, she was different, but I couldn't quite say how. She must have known about the cancer, but she didn't tell me. What I noticed was her breathing. Olive was aware of it, and her attention was catching. She took in air then, like Celestial did now, up-tempo and afraid. Little Roy, Olive said, there is no doubt in my mind. I just need to hear from your own lips that you didn't do it. I leaned back, flinching as though she'd spit in my face. Olive reached for me the way you would lunge for a glass tumbling from the table.
I know you didn't, she cooed. I know you didn't. Please let me hear you say it.
I was with Celestial the whole time. You could ask her.
I don't want to ask her, my mother said. I want it from you.
I can't remember this day without hearing the air around her words, without imagining the tumors multiplying, consuming her body. Olive was dying, and I spoke to her with bitterness in my mouth. That I didn't know makes no difference. Mama, I said, talking to her like she was slow or didn't speak English. I am not a rapist. Little Roy, she began, but I cut her off. I don't want to talk anymore. When she left, she said,
I believe you.
As I watched her walk away, I made note of everything about her that I didn't admire. I ignored the devotion that she wore like a cape. I paid no heed of her strength or hard work and beauty. I sat there thinking of all I didn't love about her, too angry to even say goodbye. In a quiet room, my wife lifted her lovely arms, encircling my neck, pulling me to her with a power I didn't know she had.
I want you to be okay.
Her voice was brave and determined. I didn't do it, I said. I never touched that lady. She thought it was me. You couldn't tell her that I didn't break into her room and hold her down. When she was on the stand, I couldn't even look in her face because in her eyes, I was a barbarian, worse than a dog. When I looked at her, looking at me, I became what she thought I was. There's nothing worse that you can say about a man.
Shh, Celestial said. All that's over?
Nothing is ever over, I said, unwinding her arms from my shoulders. I lay beside her, remembering us sprawled on the asphalt, forbidden to touch. Celestial, I said, surprised by the bass of my own voice in my chest. I am not a rapist. Do you hear what I'm trying to tell you?
Yes,
she said, but she seemed confused.
I never thought you did it. I know who I married.
Georgia, I said, I know who I married to. You're in me. When I touch you, your flesh communicates with my bones. You think I can't feel how sad you are?
I'm scared,
she said, her fingers transmitting a miserable willingness.
It's hard to start over.
The vast generosity of women is a mysterious tunnel, and nobody knows where it leads. The writing on the wall spells out trick questions, and as a man, you must know that you cannot reason your way out. What unkindness showed me that she loved me by revealing the ways that she didn't love me. Celestia was offering herself to me like a banquet prepared in the presence of my enemies, like a flawless red pear. What cruelty revealed that she cared by making me understand the limits of the same? Listen, I said with what threatened to be my last breath. Listen, Georgia, hear what I'm about to say. I made my words hard, and she stiffened against them. To make amends, I spoke tenderly like I was addressing a butterfly. Celestial, I will never force myself upon a woman. I removed her two frightened hands from my body and held them between my own. Do you hear me? I will not force you. Even if you let me, even if you want me to, I will not do it. I kissed her finger near the base, where my ring once rested. Georgia, I said, beginning a sentence I couldn't bear to complete.
I tried,
she began. Shh, just sleep, Georgia. Just sleep. But neither of us closed our eyes against the immeasurable dark of that silent night. Epilogue. Dear Celestial, people around here think I got saved in prison, but prison is a haunted house of mirrors. It was impossible for me to come to the truth there. When I try to explain this, they turn around and ask me if I am a Muslim, since I don't belong to a church. But they know that I think of myself as a man of God. I can't really break it down to them because I can't really break it down to myself. Who would believe that what happened to me came to pass in the holy dark of our bedroom? I'm ashamed to think about what I did to Andre. I swear to you that I never hurt another human being like that before. Even when I was incarcerated, I never brutalized anyone. I get hit by a sharp pain behind my eyes to think of how close I came to killing him. Dre didn't fight me back hard. That made me feel like he didn't think I was worth the effort. Maybe I wanted you to see him suffer because it didn't seem like you cared if I was in pain or not. But I knew you cared about him. I know that none of this makes sense, but I'm trying to express my emotions at that time. I was out of my head. I was even jealous of that tree. I felt forsaken. That is the only word for it. When you said you were going to call the police, I was glad. That phone in your hand was a pistol, and I was hoping that you would fire. Then you would have to live with that, and I wouldn't have to live at all. This is how my mind was working. This is how my heart was pumping. I was ready to die and take Dre with me. I was going to kill him with only the hands God gave me. I used these same hands to sign the documents your Uncle Banks drew up. Davina is a notary, so you will see her name as well. I know this is the right thing to do, but I hated seeing my signature on that dotted line. We tried. I guess that is all we can say or do. Sincerely, Roy. P.S. The tree? Did it make it?
Dear Roy, seeing your handwriting feels like a brief encounter with a friend you know you may never see again. When you were away, the letters made me feel close to you, but now they remind me how far we have traveled away from each other. I hope that one day you and I can get to know each other again. Now that I have the papers, you probably think that Andre and I will be on the next bus to the Justice of the Peace, but we don't feel the need to get married. My mother, his mother, even strangers, they all want to see me in a white dress, but Dre and I like what we have, the way we have it. At the end of the day, I don't want to be anyone's wife, not even Dre's. For his part, Dre says he doesn't want a wife who doesn't want to be one. We're living our lives together, a communion. Thank you for asking about Old Hickey. We had a specialist out last week who told us that you can tell the age of a tree just using a measuring tape and a calculator. According to the expert, Old Hickey is about 128 years old. They say he has another 128 in him, assuming that nobody else comes after him with an axe. And this is the news. I am having a baby. I hope you will be happy for Andre and for me. I know it is painful, too, and don't think that I have forgotten what we went through all those years ago. It may be unreasonable for me to ask this of you, but will you pray for us? Will you pray every day until she is born? Always, Georgia.
Dear Celestial, don't laugh, but I'm the one running to the JP. Davina and I are not trying to have a baby, but I would like to try my hand at marriage again. You say that you are not cut out to be a wife, but I disagree. You were a good wife to me when conditions were favorable, and for a long time when they were not. You deserve more respect than I ever gave you, and more than you give yourself. As for me, I would like to be a father, but Davina already has a son, and that situation is very unhappy. She doesn't want to start over, and truthfully, as much as I used to fantasize about my little Trey, I don't want to jeopardize what I have with her over a dream that may not even fit me anymore. I wish I could be like Big Roy and take her son as my own, but he is an adult. She and I are enough to be a family. If you need a kid to keep you together, then how together are you? That's what she says, and she is probably right. Of course, I will pray for your family, but you make it seem like I'm a preacher. I'm not trying to minister to anyone but myself. I have found myself a small plot of sacred ground by the stream. Do you remember that spot? I go out there early in the morning and listen to the wind play that bridge music while I think or pray. Everyone knows that this is my morning routine. Occasionally, I invite one or two to come along. Big Roy has joined me, and sometimes Davina. But mostly, it's me, alone with my own head and my own memories. And speaking of heads, Big Roy and I have gone into business. We have a barber shop called Locks and Lineups. You know I always had that entrepreneurial streak. Picture a traditional barbershop complete with pole, but with a lot of 2.0 amenities and services. We're making decent money. Not Poupe's level yet, but I'm content. My prayer for you is for peace, which is something you have to make. You can't just have it. Words of wisdom from my biological, who I go visit most Sundays. He's getting old in there, and it is hard to watch. But mostly, my life is good. Only it's a different type of good from what I figured on. Some days I get antsy and start talking to Davina about pulling up stakes and starting over in Houston, New Orleans, or even Portland. She humors me, but when I'm done, she smiles because we both know I'm not going anywhere. And when she smiles at me, I can't help giving one back. This is home. This is where I am. Sincerely, Roy. This has been a Highbridge production, read by Sean Crisden and Issa Davis. Copyright 2018 by Tiare Jones. Published by arrangement with Algonquin Books of Chapel Hill, a division of Workman Publishing Company, Incorporated.
Recording copyright 2018 by Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.